This week in KMA land, Mills County hears the latest on a carbon pipeline proposal. Former Nebraska Senator Ben Sass is diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Montgomery County officials set budgetary elected official pay increases. KMA land school officials brace for property tax reform. Pottawatomie County officials fill a supervisor vacancy. Income tax among priorities from Missouri lawmakers in the 26th session. And Red Oak teachers get an early Christmas present. I'm Ethan Hewitt, filling in for the vacationing Mike Peterson. Well, Mills County officials heard the latest regarding a proposed carbon dioxide pipeline that would cut through a rural portion of the county's northwest corner. At its regular meeting Tuesday morning, the Mills County Board of Supervisors heard a presentation from Snyder & Associates regarding the agricultural land inspection for Tallgrass's Trailblazer CO2 pipeline. Based on plans from Tallgrass, Snyder's Christina Paradise says the company is planning to construct 2.43 miles of 8-inch pipeline and 61.61 miles of 24-inch pipeline in Mills County, running from the Sire Ethanol Plant in Council Bluffs, southwest of the Nebraska-Iowa border, where it would cross under the Missouri River into Nebraska. The product would then be transported to a sequestration site in Wyoming. Paradise says the proposed route would cross three county roads in Mills County, with an additional facility constructed near the state border.
This is a 4 inch of the pipeline and their records. Bungie, Alice, and Levy Access Road. And according to their Exhibit C, Trailblazer will construct a launcher and receiver station at the capture facility at the Sire plant, and then a second launcher and receiver facility will be constructed in Mills County along with the mainline valve station and metering station. And they're going to do that where the 24-inch and the 8-inch connect, just before the river crossing.
Paradise says Iowa code requires the county to hire an inspector to ensure the project's agricultural mitigation plan is followed, with the pipeline company reimbursing the county for the expenses. While noting they are not inspecting the pipeline construction itself, Paradise says they would review a wide variety of aspects related to agricultural land restoration before, during, and after construction.
Construction in wet conditions, site dewatering activities, right-of-way staking, activities related to clearing, and that includes fencing and tree removal, topsoil removal and stockpiling, tile marking, which tile, I know you guys don't have a lot of drainage tile down here. You have some, maybe, but not a lot. But your any erosion control structure would be, it falls into that category. And then permanent tile repair, which would be permanent erosion control structure repair, backfilling, decompaction, restoration,
revegetation. However, she notes that items such as county road crossings would be the responsibility of the county engineer, while the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration would regulate and inspect the pipeline itself. Well, the board also met with Montgomery County resident Jan Norris, who discussed the Iowa Utilities Commission hearing on the project earlier this month. Based on recommendations from the Office of Consumer Advocate, Norris says any permit issued by the IUC will likely come with stipulations.
At least one commissioner was very concerned about water usage. Trailblazer was unable to give specifics, saying designs weren't complete yet. Landowner royalties are estimated at $3,300 annually, but prorated per landowner. They will be paid at 10 cents per metric ton for 10 years while the CO2 is being transported. They anticipate it will take 25 years to fill the capacity in Wyoming for their 6 sequestration permits.
Well, regarding payment for the agricultural land inspection, Paradise says invoices from Snyder & Associates and payments from the pipeline company would pass through the county. Plans call for the Tallgrass pipeline designed to be completed in January of next year, with construction commencing shortly thereafter, so long as they receive the necessary permits. And former Nebraska Senator Ben Sass announced this week that he has been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. In a post on X, the two-term former U.S. senator wrote that he was diagnosed last week with metastasized stage 4 pancreatic cancer, calling the diagnosis a death sentence. The 53-year-old Sass served as a U.S. senator from Nebraska from 2015 to 2023. He resigned from the role that year after he was hired as the president of the University of Florida. He then resigned from his position with the school in July 2024 after his wife was diagnosed with epilepsy. The Nebraska-born son of a high school teacher and football coach, Sass earned his bachelor's degree in government from Harvard before studying at Oxford University and St. John's College. He received his PhD in history from Yale University. A link to the full post from SAS is available with this story at KMALand.com. Well, and as budget preparations get underway, Montgomery County officials have set preliminary salary increases for elected officials. By a 3-2 vote at its regular meeting this week, the Montgomery County Board of Supervisors approved for budgetary purposes a 10% salary increase for the county attorney, 6.25% salary increase for the county sheriff, 3% salary increases for the county treasurer, recorder, and auditor, and no increase for the supervisors. Well, the move came after reviewing the recommendations from the County Compensation Board, with the only differences being the board recommending a 6% increase for the county treasurer and recorder and a 3.25% increase for the supervisors. Supervisor Mark Peterson joined Supervisor Alex Burton in voting against the initial increases. While acknowledging that the recommendations are not set in stone and could go lower, Peterson says he would have preferred to set smaller initial increases for all elected officials.
It does seem to
hang there.
Yeah, I would hope maybe we would not known where we stand for revenue coming in, take a percentage of something less across the board from what that is, and go with that.
Supervisor Brian Tamas joined Supervisors Charlotte Schmidt and Mike Olson voting in favor. In addition to proposing the 0% increase for the supervisors, Amos had originally suggested a flat increase for all other elected officials.
A couple of years ago, salaries were adjusted, and listening to the meeting the other night, but it still wasn't really out of line with the state average. I would suggest a 3%. Which is slightly higher than the cost of living. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care if the supervisors take anything. I'd rather see a 3% raise that would come to better use in the county.
Meanwhile, Burton had instead suggested lowering each recommendation from the compensation board by a similar percentage. He felt that a flat 3% increase would be counterproductive to the compensation board's work.
I think to some extent they're recommending different amounts because they're saying some of them are not in line, right? Because 6.25% for the sheriff, 6% for treasurer and recorder, and 10% for the attorney. So to some extent, they're saying, well, we think with our information and our homework, they're not perfectly in line, and they may need a little bit of a bump up.
Olson reiterated that the salary increases approved Tuesday were for budgetary purposes only, adding that they will ultimately have to see if the departments can make those increases work. Well, the final budget for county, cities, and schools for the upcoming fiscal year won't be finalized until the spring of next year. And Pottawatomie County officials have appointed an individual to the vacancy on the Board of Supervisors. Meeting at 2 p.m. Tuesday, a supervisors' vacancy committee comprised of the county auditor, county treasurer, and county recorder considered applications and appointed Keith Jones to the vacancy left by the removal of Supervisor Scott Belt on December 4th. Barring a petition for a special election, Jones will serve the remainder of Belt's unexpired term, which runs through December 31st of next year. Well, after nearly 2 days of testimony earlier this month, the district judge ruled that Belt could not return to his seat on the board after a legal petition was filed by County Auditor Matt Wilbur against Belt in November. Wilbur cited Belt's actions at a town hall meeting in Carson on November 5th and other incidents of alleged drunken conduct. County officials say Jones will be sworn in at the next Board of Supervisors meeting and begin serving immediately following formal acceptance of the appointment. Well, and Missouri lawmakers have their sights on income tax reform in the upcoming state legislative session. That was the message from State Senator Rusty Black, who previewed the 2026 Missouri legislative session on KMA's Morning Line program Friday morning. With lawmakers gaveling into session on January 7th, scrapping the state's personal income tax was also a priority identified by Governor Mike Kehoe last month. While exact details of the governor's proposal have yet to be revealed, Black says it would be a gradual phase out over a few years.
It won't be like you turn a switch off. It will be a process of eliminating income tax. The information provided to me is that it will increase gathering taxes on maybe services, transfer some of the tax collection for the state over on services and other additional sales and use tax.
Black says another potential replacement for the income tax would be the state's recently passed wayfair tax, but he says a court case could complicate that process.
We passed in the state of Missouri like Missouri 3 or 4 years ago, the Wayfair tax, where we could start collecting state sales tax and other entities could collect taxes on deliveries, you know, when you bought something from Amazon or over the internet. And I've been told there's been a lawsuit filed on it. So that will complicate that even more this year going forward.
Well, in the 2021 bill that allowed the state to capture sales tax from online purchases, it also expanded sales tax exemptions for mines and factories, prompting a lawsuit from two southeast Missouri counties in October, which allegedly lost 20% of their sales tax revenue. Well, in Missouri, the personal income tax accounts for over half of the state's general revenues. Thus, Black says they will need to be sure there is adequate funding from other sources to keep services operational.
People don't want to pay taxes, but we do want the services. We must provide Medicaid. We will provide education in our state, public K-12 education, as well as support of higher education there. We for sure are going to have a Department of Corrections, mental health. So those services will still be provided. There'll be the income coming from somewhere else.
Old Black says the idea of reducing and ultimately eliminating the income tax has picked up steam over the past couple of years. We'll have more of This Week in KMA Land coming up here in just a moment, including school officials' reactions to potential property tax reform in Iowa. Welcome back to This Week in KMA Land. Well, KMA Land school officials are among those bracing for potential property tax reform in the upcoming Iowa legislative session. Lewis Central School Superintendent Brent Hazen gave an update to the Lewis Central School Board at its latest meeting on possible proposals coming down from lawmakers in the 2026 Iowa General Assembly, which gavels into session on January 12th. As outlined in the financial report presented at that same meeting, Hazing notes that property taxes help fund several areas of a school district's budget in Iowa, including the general fund, debt service, management fund, and the public education and recreation levy. Hazing says one proposal from the state lawmakers he has heard is to provide some property tax relief by shifting more of the burden to supplemental state aid, the state's per pupil funding granted to public school districts.
Now that's great when the state's running a surplus every year, okay, which they have been for a while. So they're running these big surpluses. So to say, okay, we're going to take the surplus and we're going to spend that money on your schools, and then you're not going to have to spend as much locally on your schools. However, that's not the case this year, and it wasn't the case last year, because now that we've shifted to a 3.8% income tax for everybody, and we've lowered property or income tax pretty significantly, that means the state's not bringing enough money at all.
Hazing says the state is expected to shift $463.6 million from its taxpayer relief fund to fill a budget gap in fiscal year 2026. While there might be money in there now, Hazing says that the state's burden on school funding grows and that a fund eventually runs out, it could ultimately shift the cost back to the local taxpayers. He laid out a hypothetical scenario in which the state's SSA was $8,000 per student.
The state says we're going to pay for the majority of that out of our budget. We're going to pay $5,000 of the $8,000 out of our budget. And this is all hypothetical. And the property tax owners can pay $3,000, whereas before they might have paid $3,500. And now the taxpayers are going to pay $3,000 out of their local taxes, okay, property taxes. Well, then what happens if in next year the state can't cover it, okay? We're still guaranteed to get $8,000 a student, even if they don't give us a raise. If they can't cover it, it's got to come right back onto the property tax owners, which is going to raise taxes, and they don't want to do that.
Hazing says another concern paired with the property tax rate has been the state shifting portions of the funding out of Secure and Advanced Vision for Education, or SAVE dollars, into other areas of the state's budget. The superintendent emphasized that voters in all 99 counties approved the use of the state penny sales tax for the school infrastructure and property tax relief.
They voted it in for the sole purposes of providing revenue to local school districts, okay? Like, that's what it's supposed to be used for us to be able to use it on our facilities and for tax relief. So if they start taking that away, then there's no, that restricts the amount of tax relief we're going to be able to have.
Hazing adds that funding such as SAVE is still regulated through revenue purpose statements approved by the voters. He adds restricting dates for special elections can also have an impact by consolidating school, county, and city referendums all onto one ballot. Well, in Pottawatomie County, officials are finalizing the financial plans to transfer to the Iowa Statewide Interoperable Communication System, or ISICS. At its regular meeting this week, the Pottawatomie County Board of Supervisors set a public hearing on a fiscal year 2026 budget amendment for its January 13th meeting at 10 a.m. County Finance and Tax Officer Becky Lenihan says the amendment would cover upgrades to radio and communication equipment and construction costs associated with switching to the ISICS system, which allows law enforcement, first responders, and other public safety officials to communicate regardless of agency or jurisdiction.
It's just one item. It's upgrading and adding hardware software for the E911 Motorola project in the amount of $16 million. I propose that we have that public hearing on 1/13 at 10 a.m.
Well, the board also unanimously approved transferring $10.25 million from the general fund to the capital projects fund for that 911 Motorola project. Earlier this month, the board approved an agreement with Motorola Solutions for equipment and technology upgrades needed to join the statewide system. At that December meeting, Supervisor Susan Miller said the agreement is backed by a committee of stakeholders who were tasked with studying the county's communications options.
We all agreed that working with one vendor for the entire project is probably the best to go to avoid scheduling conflicts during the project, and also to avoid finger pointing and delays if something isn't working right. There's advantage to working with one vendor.
Well, currently, Pottawatomie County's communications run through a Motorola-managed system in Douglas County, making it the last county in Iowa to operate on an out-of-state communications system. In addition to upgrades for their current equipment, Miller said the project calls for building two new towers to improve radio coverage in the county.
The timeline indicates a two-year process for cutover to ISICS, adding a tower on top of the courthouse and building a tower in Crescent, and a tower located adjacent to the Crescent Water Tower appears to be the best solution.
Well, authorized by the Iowa Legislature in 2007 and jointly managed by the Iowa Department of Public Safety and the Iowa Department of Transportation, construction on the ISICS network began in 2016. And Red Oak school teachers have received an early Christmas present courtesy of the Red Oak Optimist Club. Well, the Optimist Club presented a donation at Inman Elementary and the junior senior high school on Monday to help reimburse certified teachers for classroom expenses they paid out of their own pockets. Dan Krause is the president of the Red Oak Optimist Club. Krause tells KMA News that they were aware of the quiet reality in education, that teachers often reach into their own pockets for extra classroom supplies, and felt that wasn't right.
Even though we know it's a common practice for teachers all over the area, we thought there's something we could do to help out. So looking at ways that we could help out our local school district affecting kids at the same time, we knew that there was a direct correlation between the teachers and the students, and we thought that this is a way that we could give back to them and kind of reimburse some of the money that we know they take out of their own pockets.
The donation allocates $50 to each certified teacher in the district. Krause says they have also coordinated with Red Oak School Superintendent Ron Lorenz, Junior Senior High Principal Nate Perrin, and Inman Principal Jane Shelley to make the reimbursement possible.
We make sure that we have a personalized letter to each of them and then make sure that they get that contribution. So especially this time of year when the teachers are really looking forward to a break, kind of a downtime that they're basically exhausted. They're really looking forward to something to kind of recharge their batteries, and they need something from the people that they serve, showing that we support them.
Funding for Optimist projects such as the teacher reimbursement comes from donations of cans and bottles at the group's collection center located at Fairway in Red Oak. Krause says the collection site is actually a partnership with the local Rotary Club.
We switch off every other month, and what we'll do is we'll process cans and bottles that are left there, and then take them to a service that redeems them for this and then reimburses us for those materials that we provide for them. So it's a nice revenue stream. It's a lot of work. Once again, here's a fine example of how the community steps up and helps out, knowing that everything that they drop off there, every penny that they donate through that is kept right here in our community.
Krause also thanked teachers for their late nights, personal sacrifices, and being a guiding hand for the community's youth. And infrastructure projects in Western Iowa are among those receiving a financial boost from the USDA Rural Development. The U.S. Department of Agriculture Rural Development announced more than $12 million in grants and loans to improve water and safety systems in rural Iowa communities this month. Among those receiving funding for water infrastructure is the city of Macedonia, which is securing $580,000 to construct a new well at its existing well field. Meanwhile, the city of Pisgah in Harrison County received a $1.3 million loan and a $1.1 million grant to replace aging water pipes, and the city of Ricketts in Crawford County received a $200,000 loan and a $900,000 grant to bring its wastewater system into compliance with water quality and sanitation standards. Former state lawmaker and USDA Rural Development State Director for Iowa Mike Sexton tells KMA News that rural community infrastructure is a top priority for the agency.
We spend a fair amount of our money on is the actual treatment plants, updating them, as well as the infrastructure, the piping to get it into the communities, recognizing that a lot of our rural communities, the infrastructure is aging. A lot of these communities, these pipes have been in the ground for sometimes 80 years.
Well, Denison Municipal Utilities in Crawford County also recently received a $1 million grant to improve the city of Denison's water supply, including the construction of a rock riffle dam in the East Boyer River to recharge their wells. Sexton says USDA rural development funding is critical for smaller rural communities to keep water and sewer rates manageable, given the often high price tags of water and wastewater projects.
And what we see quite often is that those rates get so astronomical that the citizens can't afford to pay their utility bills anymore. And so that's where USDARD steps in and helps the cities and communities complete those projects and yet keep the billing and keep the rates down so that the city or the county can maintain those rates so they're not so high for the citizens that live there. That's why these programs are so important.
Meanwhile, the city of Clearfield received a $29,000 grant through the agency's Special Evaluation Assistance for Rural Communities and Households, or SEARCH program, to help complete a preliminary engineering report on the city's wastewater system. While water and sewer infrastructure projects are a big focus, Sexton says USDA Rural Development provides funding for a wide variety of initiatives in local communities.
We've replaced fire trucks and police cars and things that are essential for a community to be able to function. And so we have a broad range of programs that can help in, upgrading warning systems and, like I said, police cars, fire trucks, the buildings, the fire department. So it's a very, very encompassing program.
For more information about the various funding programs, visit the USDA Rural Development Iowa website at rd.usda.gov/Iowa. You can also contact the agency's main office in Des Moines at 515-284-4663. Well, Council Bluffs Lake is among those receiving a trout stocking early next year. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources announced earlier this week its 2026 Winter Community Trout Stocking schedule, releasing rainbow trout in 9 locations across Iowa in areas that would not support them during warmer months. Among the lakes this winter is Big Lake in Council Bluffs, with a trout stocking scheduled for January 23rd at 3 p.m. Iowa DNR officials say anglers need a valid fishing license and need to pay the trout fee to fish or possess trout. Officials say the daily limit is 5 trout per licensed angler, with a possession limit of 10. Children aged 15 or younger can fish for trout with a properly licensed adult, but together can only keep 1 daily limit. The Iowa DNR says children can pay the trout fee to keep their own daily limit. Well, that wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Ethan Hewitt, and have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.